by the powers vested in me by the Federal Communications Commission, I command you to get on the microphone in a serious manner and continue this broadcast.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to Cairo Nights. I'm Spike O'Neill. 6 minutes after 7 o'clock, Matt Butler's on the board. Go!
Good evening, everyone.
How are you, buddy?
I am doing good. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I appreciate you asking.
I'm getting in a thankful mood. I am in a good mood today, and it's irrational. And it's it bothers me when I get in a mood this good, because, you know, you wonder how far you have to fall.
You're going to be just fine, pal. I got your back. We're all here. We're all here together. We're all in this together. It is the right time of the year. I don't mean to be all sappy pappy about the holidays, but it's a time we all really need. We need this to recharge. We need this to take inventory of our year and take a stock of our lives and what's important and what's not important. And I don't mean to belittle anybody's problems or the stress and strain and anxiety that comes with trying to make it through day to day in this city, in this county, in this state, in this country. It can be tough, can be real tough. But I think that further illustrates my point of the need to just take stock of what's important in your life and the people around you and the things that you can be thankful for, because we all have something we can be thankful for. And that's what the week's all about. That's what the holiday's all about, of Thanksgiving and the holiday season in general.
You know, I was telling Nate Connors earlier off the air, how lucky are we to be able to do this job? I mean, we've talked about it before, but especially as things get colder and you think of all the things that people have to do for a living, to get out, to face the elements, to deal with angry shoppers during the holiday season, yeah. Cranky customers at the coffee shop. And you and I, we get to sit in this cool studio and talk about things in the news and talk about music. And it's just a very fun job. And I am grateful to everybody that listens.
Is it a cool studio tonight? I could turn up the heat for you. Are you anything other than completely comfortable? Because that's the kind of world we live in.
Climate controlled and good to go.
It is. And I don't ever want to take that for granted. You're right. You're spot on, man. But it doesn't matter if you are doing what you love or doing what pays the bills. I know a guy who works as a plumber. He's fantastic. He owns his own little plumbing company. And we'll shout out to Dave at Maple Valley Plumbing. Solid citizen, business owner, conservative, hates my political guts, but I love the guy. We're dear, dear friends. We don't agree on anything outside of Seahawk football and music, but so that's enough. That's enough to build a bridge, right? But he goes to work every morning. I mean, I cannot believe the level of commitment that he had. And he's not alone in that. Everybody who works a trade or who works a truck driving job or a bus driving job or an Uber drive or is bringing food to somebody's house, people that are doing what they have to get by, they work out in the elements. I mean, can you imagine trying to drive around and you know, this guy has to go in at sunrise and dig into frozen ground and, you know, and work in wet, muddy, watery plumbing in sub-freezing temperatures a lot of times. And from the next 3-4 months, that's his day in, day out. You know, and he doesn't bitch about that. He's happy to have the work. He knows how hard it is to build a career in a company. And we're blessed. We are blessed to have opportunity and the ability to meet that opportunity and meet the moment and take care of our family. I was talking to my dear friends from the Bob River Show. Joe and Bob and I got together tonight to do a little podcasting prior to our show here tonight, Matt. And we closed out by just, you know, hey, let's take a minute to just tell each other what we're thankful for. And, you know, they got to me and like, Bob, I was like, I know what you're thankful for. You get to be on the radio again. That's, you know, of course I'm thankful for that. You know, it's something that I love doing. It's in a climate controlled room and there's free coffee. What's not to love? But more importantly, you know, I love that whatever it is I'm doing. I was in sales for about a year, you know, prior to this opportunity opening up for me. And I hated it. Believe me, I hated making 125 cold calls a week, getting rejected 95% of the time. If you're good, you get rejected 95% of the time. But I appreciated the chance to get to do it. You know, I appreciated the opportunity to try to take care of my family. And when they asked me what I was thankful for this year, it's the fact that I can care for my family, that I can put food on the table and keep the roof over our heads. You know, that I've got a, we've got a boss here. I say, we've all got a boss here, a management system here, a company here that values what we do. That's not the case in a lot of industries, and it's not the case in most situations in this industry.
I was going to say it's rarely the case in this industry.
I never thought I'd see this opportunity again. I never thought I'd meet people. I don't mean to be sucking up because I hope they're listening. They just listen for the first 15 minutes of the show, right? Get the sucking up in right now before they tune out.
Yes, that's the strategy
we adhere to. No, seriously. You know, I've worked for almost every company in this town now. It's been 33 years I've been on the radio in Seattle. And I've worked for companies that have sold their businesses and moved on. And I've worked for stations that have been bought multiple times during my tenure at those stations. And I'm sure all of you can relate to this out there. Working for an employer who doesn't really value what you do for the company. I mean, they're happy that you show up for work, but if something went wrong, they'd replace you tomorrow. And if they look at the employees of their company as, you know, just, you know, pieces of the machine. And I've worked for companies that view what we do as just a necessary evil to make the wheels go around, to make the money come in. And then we get to work for the folks here at Cairo who value who we are as people, the relationship we have with this community, the opinions that we bring to the air, the dedication we have to doing our jobs, whether it's reporting the news, bringing you the technical side of our building, like the engineering staff and the board operators, you know, everybody here, the management here gets it. The company here at Bonneville, they get it. They get it that we are more than just employees. We're actually people who have families to take care of and have, you know, crises come up from time to time. And we have mental health and behavioral health challenges and struggles from time to time.
Well, in this business, that is to be expected, particularly of on-air talent.
Well, you know what? It's not a flaw. It's an asset.
It's not a bug.
It's a feature. It's a feature. That's the phrase I was looking for. Thank you. And so I just, you know, yeah, happy as a clam to be doing this. Happy as a clam to be able to take care of the family.
I wonder where that saying originated.
Happy as a clam?
Are clams, like, known for their optimistic, sunny view of the world, like, until they get pried open?
Until they rip from their skeletal shell and their home at the same time. I know. I don't know. Where is that? That's a great question. We should Google that, the origins of happy as a clam. But I truly,
to
I
be
truly
devoured am. And become unhoused at the same time.
Yeah,
that's
I
just
mean,
depressing.
That's a horror movie, you know. But it's that time of year, man. It's that time of year when folks are starting to come back to town to be together with family and friends. You know, did you ever take part in like a Thanksgiving tradition, like a turkey bowl? Where you get up and play football on Thanksgiving Day?
Well, once in my earlier radio days, a general manager actually proposed a turkey drop, but that's a phase of my life I try to put far in the past.
That is one of the coolest Thanksgiving, you know, art, cultural moments. You know, we've all got our Christmas movies and our Christmas songs. There's not many, you know. There's not many Thanksgiving records out there, very, very few. We made a few parodies. We played a couple of them. We try to play the rest of them tonight before Thanksgiving hits, or this week before Thanksgiving gets here. But, you know, the traditions of Thanksgiving, the traditions of your family get-togethers, you know, the do's and don'ts, the things you know not to do, the things you know you have to do, that you look forward to doing. It wouldn't be the same if you don't do this, that, or the other. Those traditions are phenomenally important. They're the reason for the season. They're the why we get together.
So apparently the phrase happy as a clam originated in the U.S. around 1830. And the concept behind it is that clams are happiest when the ocean is at high tide, because when the water is at high tide, clams are protected from predatory birds.
So it's not just happy as a clam. It's happy as a clam at high tide.
Right.
Nice.
Apparently safe as a clam at high tide.
Oh,
This show is so educational.
It is. Was that from the texter? You got that?
No, I looked it
okay.
up.
Okay, because we texter Benny said the exact same thing.
Well, he knew what he was talking about.
Yep. At high tide, they can stick their necks up and feed. They can actually feed. They're not just safe. They're also it's dinner time at high tide. Happy as a clam.
Safe, happy, about to have dinner. That's pretty happy.
And then when it's low tide, we're safe. They're not safe, but we're happy and we're about to have dinner. How ironic that is.
Nature, you know, is a cycle, the circle of life, as it were.
You know, this is not related at all, but I heard a story, an explanation of high tide, and it was from Neil deGrasse Tyson. You know, the is he an astrophysicist? Is that what he does?
Yes, he is.
Okay. I know he's just a smart, smart guy. And he's well-spoken, so he's always on TV. And he was talking about high tide, that the water doesn't come in and go out. It doesn't, you know, that's the high tide. He said that the world has water. It's like two-thirds water, the planet Earth, I think, three-fourths of that, two-thirds water. And that the way that the Earth spins and moves constantly around the sun, both on an axis rotation and an orbital rotation around the sun, there's like a water sac that is with the planet that literally gathers on each end of the planet. And as the Earth moves, it passes through that water sac a couple times. You imagine if you're looking at the Earth from above and you're looking at noon, 3, 6, and 9 o'clock. And the water bulges the way the Earth spins around the sun and then rotates again on its axis at the same time. The water of the planet tends to bulge at 3 and 9. So as our part of the world goes through noon, it's low tide, go through 3, it's high tide again. Down to 6, it's low tide, down to 12, or down to 9, it's high tide again. He says that is how the tides rise and fall, is that we move through that watery part of our Earth's water base on a moving rock around the sun. I thought that was kind of neat. Not much like saying the sun doesn't set. You know, the sun is in one place and we turn on a orbital, you know, rotating daily rotation. And so the sun, you know, we're turns away from the sun and we see it disappear to the west as the Earth moves toward the east in its rotation. You know, I was probably high when I heard this and it made a lot more sense. And it was much more entertaining than what I was able to convey it to you nice folks. But, you know, high tides. I love that. And of course, all that's affected by the moon, right? I think if I'm that's sack of water.
Asking the astrophysicist over
yeah,
here.
Yeah, I know, right? No, but I play one on the radio.
Hey, if everyone in my social media feed can be a virologist and a climatologist, then I can sure as heck be an astrophysicist on the radio.
Oh, here's a text that came in, and I'm glad it came in because if I'm guilty of this, I apologize. I don't want to be called out on it, but I don't think I am. I think it's a misinterpretation of what I said. It says you seem to be completely ignorant of how difficult it is for some people to survive. They don't know whether to buy gas for their car so they can get to work or buy food for their families.
That was not directed at you, though. Oh, okay. I saw that earlier.
Oh, so it came in. So he's just cutting and pasting that complaint.
Okay. It was just more of an observation.
Okay. Because trust me when I tell you, from a guy who was unemployed for almost 2 years during the pandemic and had to decimate my family's savings to keep our home and the roof over my family's head and food on the table, I know what it is. I know what it feels like. I know how hard it is to survive. I know how lucky I am. When I mentioned what we're thankful for this year is the fact that I'm able to care for my family, I know how damn hard it is. You know, and if I'm ever guilty of assuming things about people and making snap judgments about somebody else's condition, I apologize. That should not be the case, ever, ever. I think I've got a pretty good concept on how hard it is these days, and I understand that people, when we talk about the important things of the holidays, we talked about this last night a little bit, and I said first right out of the gate, not everybody has a family to go home to. Not everybody has friends to hang out with. You know, and this holiday season, every holiday season, can be the hardest time of the year on folks. Of course I know that. I'm aware of that.
It's a very lonely time for some.
It is. It is. It's a very, very difficult time. It's the one time of year, I believe, that it leads the calendar in suicides and depression.
Yeah,
the holidays.
Unfortunately.
It really does. Yeah. So I get how hard it can be, man. And I think that's why it's important to, you know, take a minute throughout your day and, you know, engage with a stranger. Not, I'm not talking about, you know, strike up a conversation, but just make eye contact, give a wave.
Sometimes it is the smallest things that the tiniest, make a difference
yes,
in a person's day.
Yes.
I remember one time several years ago, I was having a really rough day, and I dropped something, and I was so absent-minded, I didn't even feel whatever I was carrying fall off my back. And somebody tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Hey, man, you lost your bag here." And it was just, that actually made my day.
An act of kindness.
Somebody just took the moment to say, hey, you know, they, instead of picking it up and running with it,
right,
they got my attention.
Boy, ain't that the case these
Sometimes
days, too.
It's the little things
it
that
is.
Really count.
And it seems that it's ridiculed when people do random acts of kindness. You know, it's looked at as a sign of weakness. I don't know when we got to the point where being a bully or being rude or, you know, or owning somebody became a sign of strength. Because that's really not strong. It's not strong to belittle other people. It's not strong to think yourself better from somebody else. There's no strength in that. That's weakness. Any psychologist, any sociologist will tell you that people who front up a brave facade are insecure. They're covering for something. They're fronting somebody. You know, it's much braver. It's much harder to be vulnerable, to admit when you made a mistake, to be kind to people, to be empathetic toward those who are suffering. I'm well aware at how hard it can be these days. And you're right. I apologize. That text I was getting, that wasn't a cut and paste from earlier in the show. That was me not keeping up with how fast the texts are coming in. That was meant for a previous show today. And I hope that the host that came in during their show, I hope they saw that. You know, like I said, if I'm ever guilty of assuming too much about folks, please let me know. Call us out. You know, if Matt makes a mistake, don't say anything because he's really sensitive. Don't bring it up. He could snap at any second. No, I'm kidding.
Hey, I just put on a front and pretend I didn't make any mistakes.
Front it up, buddy. You know, and I'm not going to get political, you know, much. I'm not going to do it on purpose. But, you know, we've got people who just will never, you know what I'm talking about. Never admit a mistake. It's a sign of weakness. My ass it is. It's a sign of stupidity and ignorance. You know, you don't learn if you don't admit that when you make a mistake. That's how you learn. You learn from our mistakes. We learn from our history. Watched an amazing piece of tape about critical race theory and how it has been vilified and it's been latched onto as a cudgel, a weapon in a culture war argument for political purposes. And the gentleman I heard speaking was a professor, brilliant, brilliant man. And he was saying, you know, we all look at history through our own private lens, our own personal experience lens. And we'd be remiss as Americans if we didn't celebrate the glory and the greatness of this country, but also recognizes the weakness and the frailty and the mistakes of our history. You know, it's not truly understanding who we are unless we understand the good, the bad, and the ugly. You know?
Or, in the words of Paul Begala, it's not love America right or wrong. It's love America and work to right its wrongs.
There you go. Ooh, nicely done. Remember when this was the biggest band on the planet? Oh, it's Cairo Nights, everybody. We're off to a fine start. Texters are already chiming in. I appreciate that. It's nice to see folks who are here nightly taking part in the various conversations we have. It's always nice to see a fresh number come up, fresh name come up in the text line that we haven't had a chance to interact with before. Those are appreciated. If you're new to the show and you're just giving us a shot, we appreciate that. You can find all of our old shows through podcasting on the MyNorthwest.com website. You can text us on a nightly basis at 888-973-5476. We'll be right back after these. Please hope you'll stay with us.
Free, but you can give them to the birds and bees. I want money. That's what I want. That's what I want. That's what I want. Your love gives me such a thrill, but your love won't pay my bills. I want money.
Playing this for you, up for a raise or something?
That's what's going on?
Oh, it's the new Harry Styles, don't you know?
It's the new Harry Styles, a running joke with Matt and I. Welcome back to Cairo Nights, everybody. Yeah, you know, it's tough this time of year to make everybody happy at Christmas. It's been a tough year for everybody to make ends meet. And now the two go together, hand in hand, hand in cuff, it feels like sometimes. How are folks going to going to put a good Christmas together. And we talked about this, excuse me, a little bit last week. You know, how folks are going to deal with the expectations of Christmas. You know? And, hey, the expectations of Thanksgiving dinner. We talked about this a little bit, too, that it's cheaper to dine out this year than it is to have a meal at home, given the rising price of everything on your Thanksgiving menu. I don't know, though. You know, that's there's a sliding economic scale of how many people are you feeding. I imagine if you're going to have two people go out to dinner on Thanksgiving night, it really depends on where you go, because you can probably go to Denny's and get both of you out the door for under $30, right? And you're not going to cook a turkey for two at home with all the sides and all the things that it takes to make a Thanksgiving meal for under $30. So at that point, I guess you're right. You could also go to a nicer restaurant and spend $200 for two people on Thanksgiving night. But if you've got like 10 people, if you've got 8 people coming over, you're putting those, an event together, you can't take that many people to a restaurant and have it be less expensive than cooking at home. I refuse to believe that. I know things are expensive. Turkeys are twice what they were last year. And it just drives me nuts when people point their fingers at whoever's in the White House. Inflation is due in large part to a global situation, but also contributing factors come from policies made by the current political administration in charge. Of course, they have a thumb on the scale, if you will, about how inflation rears its ugly head in our lives day to day, from oil prices, from grocery prices, all those things. All those things contribute. Turkeys, there's a couple factors in why turkeys are so expensive from just a year ago. I said twice as expensive. In some markets, it's 3 to 4 times as expensive as it was a year ago for turkey. Well, in 2018, the turkey growers of America had a terrible year because they had so many unsold birds at the end of the turkey season, at the end of the holiday season, Christmas and Thanksgiving. So they decided to, you know, hedge their losses and grow less turkeys that are all kind of coming due this year, the ones that are ready for market for us this year, that are waiting for you in the groceries, refrigerated meat section, the poultry section. Those turkeys were birthed back in 2018. Average turkey for consumption is 3 years plus old. Well, when you sit on a bunch of unsold turkeys, you don't want to go through that again. It's not like Christmas trees where you're just going to get a year bigger next year. You know, a turkey has a year that it's ready to be harvested like any other resource. So in 2018, they decided to grow less turkeys this year. So there's already going to be a bit of a shortage and a higher price for the growers. Then there was a record avian flu that swept through the turkey populations of a lot of growers, causing entire turkey, you know, harvests on various produce farms, poultry farms, I should say, poultry farms, to be wiped out for fear of that virus spreading to the rest of not only their harvest, but other farms as well. So you got a perfect storm there of them starting with already a smaller lot of turkeys for us to be able to pick from, and with a flu wiping out a large portion of that. So you already got increased turkey prices. Then you couple that with the fact that grocers are making record profits. Grocers have record high labor rates because with the unemployment numbers as low as they are, the competition for workers is tough on every field, every occupation. And if grocers want to have enough people, they have to pay accordingly or no one's going to come work for them.
Credit where credit's due, though. I read the other day that I believe one of the major retail chains, I think it was Walmart, where they actually said, we're keeping turkey at the same price as last year so that people can afford to buy a turkey.
Really?
That was actually really great.
I hadn't heard that. That's fantastic. I got to be honest, I don't have a real high view of the folks who run Walmart. Don't get me wrong. We all need a place that can help us make budget. We all need low prices. Who doesn't love low prices? I think that's I hadn't heard that. Thanks for mentioning that, and it's probably still the case, right? I mean, if you are right now wondering how you're gonna if you probably already have your turkey, you know, if you're gonna make a turkey this year, I'm sure you've already got it. But if you don't and you're wondering if you can even afford it, or a big enough bird, you got to skimp and make more sides, or however you're meeting the number. It's nice to know that Walmart is selling turkeys for the same price they did last year. That's good to know. We're always quick to point fingers at folks and, you know, point out their shortcomings and their whatever. When people do the right thing, when companies do the right thing for their employees, it's, I mean, we start out tonight talking about how the folks at Bonneville here treat their employees with some respect. You know, treat us like a valuable part of what we do, not a necessary evil of putting a radio show on. Well, I guess we're going to bring the guy talking. I've worked for that company, or at least I was until they fired me for making too much money, but that's neither.
Did you ever do the math at the unnamed previous place to figure out how much you got paid per word? I bet that would be really depressing.
Oh, God, no. You know what? It was embarrassing, to be honest with you. I made a really nice living in radio. You know, after 25 plus years of you know, having an audience appreciate what you do, you climb up through the ranks, you know, and you reach a level of success. I mentioned my friend earlier who runs his own plumbing company down there in Maple Valley, and he works hard, but he's worked hard for a long time. He gets a nice rate because he's got a good reputation and he's got a good client base to draw, and his name means something, and people who use his services and hire him recommend him to their friends. You know, they say that customer service is a dying art. I think now it's the most valuable part of your business is customer service. Everybody knows what everything costs these days. We're the most informed consuming public we've ever been. We all have access to, you know, I sold cars for a long time before I found radio, before radio found me, I should say, because radio really found me. I sold cars. And back in the 80s, when I was a car salesman and a finance manager at a car dealership, you know, it was a game of hide and seek.
Did you do that thing like William Macy's character in the movie Fargo and try to sell him on that clear coat?
Oh, you bet I did. That was part of the profit margin we had as a dealership. Rust proofing, undercoating, fire protection, you bet. Absolutely. Protect the paint on your car. You don't want to leave the paint out there in the sun unprotected. Of course not. You want mirror glaze on top of that paint. Keeps paint fresher longer. It's an investment that's going to pay for itself. When it comes time to resell the car, still looks brand new, you get your money back tenfold. Come on. Easy. Those are easy. But those are all just fat gravy hits on the bottom line. And that was the thing. Back then, you literally had to hide the price from the consumer, what the retailer paid for the car, what the car dealership paid, and how much profit you were making when you sold it. That was the game. These days, that's not the, everybody knows what cars cost. And the only thing that separates you from the guy across the street or down the road who's got the same, if not a very similar car, is how you're going to treat them. Is customer service. My friend at the plumbing company, he takes care of people. He's not, and plumbers have a reputation almost as bad as car salesmen. There are plumbing companies out there that are just horrific, but there are some good ones, big and small, that stand behind their work, that hire pros to do the job, that take care of the customer, you know, that don't exploit a bad situation. And by the way, it is coming up on not just the most joyous time of the year. It's the most pipe-clogging time of the year. Do the math, people. We're all eating at a record pace with record numbers of people in our home. That pipe doesn't get bigger on Thursday and Friday. This is the wrong time of year to have plumbing troubles. You know? And a lot of companies will jack people through the roof if you got to call them on a holiday. Good companies, you know what? The rate's the rate. They don't exploit their clientele. And they're few and further between. This is the king of rock and roll. Don't play no. Oh man, that's nice. People like people that they can trust and enjoy working with, and people who value, you know, their customers. And it's rarer and rarer and rarer. It's nice to see it when it happens. I'm gonna call my friend Dave. Well, there was a story today about that reality couple.
Chrisleys,
yeah. Let's talk about them real quick when we come back.
Sounds good.
I hate to see the misfortunes of others, but some people just ask for it and they get it. We'll be right back. It's Cairo Nights. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Power Nights, everybody. It is 10 minutes to 8, and it is, I'm Spike O'Neill with Matt Butler, Cairo Knights. That's the Kinks. Love the Kinks. Low budget land. I was never a fan of this. I'm not a big fan of reality TV, first off. I understand that it is an art to take people of mostly just normal mentality and normal lifestyles. And the real trick in reality TV is to, it's all in the editing. It's on how you paint these people, how, what story you tell using the people that you have to work with. You portray folks as a villain. You portray folks as a hero, as an underdog, whatever it might be. And that's, you know, good reality TV is just good production, good storytelling. And when you got humans that you can actually care about or learn to dislike, that makes for great, you know, entertainment. I personally prefer good storytelling. I prefer good stories, good writers, good actors, not just manipulating narcissists who want to be famous in a reality TV setting. Whether they're playing themselves as, you know, like a Kardashian group or the Osbournes or whomever, or in this case, Todd and Julie Crisley. And I never watched Crisley Knows Best. I was aware of it. I kind of happened to cross it a couple times over the years. And, you know, and you stop and you pause. What is this nonsense?
I would always see the promos, and I couldn't really figure out why someone would be drawn in to watch it. Now, I know that sounds critical.
No.
But something about it never hooked me. It just seemed like, you know, rich people are going to rich.
Well, there's a lot to what you're saying, but it's also a classic fish out of water because they spoke with Southern accents. And while that may be prejudiced of my perception of the world, there's a pretty commonly shared opinion that folks with deep Southern accents come across as less intelligent. I know there's nothing to that. There's no basis in fact for that. It's just a preconception and a prejudice we all have about folks with accents. So when you see someone who talks like a hick but has a ton of money, you're curious. You know, it's a fish out of water. It's something that you're familiar with doing something unexpected. That's one of the basic elements of good entertainment. Is the unexpected. Well, the Crisleys, apparently they Todd and Julie, made their fortunes as real estate developers, and they were very charismatic, and they had a ton of money and goofy kids, and they did goofy things. But one of the goofy things they did was never tell the truth to the IRS, to various banks. You know, and they've both, the Crisleys, Todd and Julie, have been sentenced to lengthy prison terms. I think Todd got 12 years, Julie got 7 years for misrepresenting their corporate tax returns to the IRS. And they went to trial last year and they got caught. Their accountant, their tax attorney, got sentenced to 3 years for knowingly filing false reports to the IRS. And the Crisleys, who were living high on the hog and famous and rich and all the things of the American dream, you know, you guys still got to pay the freight, babe. You know, you still got to go and, you know, play by the rules. And the Crisleys are going away. And they're pleading their case. And as all, we all have the right to do. You appeal a decision and say, you know, well, that's a little harsh. My client didn't have a career of this. Didn't have a lifetime history of this. But then it's not the case for the Crisleys. They were defrauding banks 12, 15 years ago, 10, 12 years ago. They were defrauding various local banks in the Atlanta area. Now they're, you know, trying to monkey around with the IRS, and they got caught. They're arguing that, well, the people who film our show are going to suffer if we don't film our show. Well, they'll be okay. You'll find other clam dips to take advantage of and produce a reality show. You got to go, and yeah, come on, you'll be fine in jail. Cute little frail rich white guy with a Southern accent. You'll be popular as all get out in jail. Yeah. Oof. I've often said that what matters most to me is fairness, more so than winning or losing, is dealing straight up, playing by the rules. May the best man win. I don't like officials to dictate ball games. I don't like lying to dictate elections. I don't like cheating to dictate who gets a better seat at the table. I like seeing people who have been cheating and committing fraud and lying get caught. I think it's It teaches the rest of us, hey, you know what? It gets tough, but still you play by the rules. Everybody else does. You can too. You're not above those rules. Anybody see a parallel with the first former first family? Maybe. I'm trying not to make it too hard, too obvious for you folks to find this thread of commonality. But the Grizzlies are going to jail, and, you know, who knows how mighty the mighty might fall? Who knows how high it'll go? Who knows? It's Kyra Knights. I'm Spike Lee. We'll be right back.